Tonight, I'm going to take a quick review of what we talked about last week. So chapter 4, Wisdom from the Father. Does anybody want to kind of summarize that, start us off? Otherwise, I'll kick us off. What was chapter 4? So it was chapters 4, 5, and 6. What was chapter 4 about? High-level summary. So chapter 4, to me, was kind of that father speaking in that firsthand experience, Solomon sharing his wisdom, and God sharing his wisdom in that relationship type of situation of a father talking to his son, sitting down with him, discussing what wisdom is and how to gain it. And so also in chapter 4 was verses 20 through 27, where it talks about using your whole body as a is utilizing wisdom in action. So not just having the knowledge, but actually using that knowledge and wisdom. Chapter 4, rejoicing in the wife of your youth. Chapter 5. What was chapter 5 about? I have nothing to say to that. Go ahead, Mason.
Paul does call it mystery. There's a positive, there's a negative of avoiding adulterous women, and then there's a positive, as you have it there, of what God did design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Avoiding sin, the adulterous woman, and truly really rejoicing and enjoying the wife of your youth and the righteousness that we have with that relationship with God also in that. And then chapter 6, Wisdom Works. What was chapter 6 about? And we didn't talk much about the things God hates. So I did want to take just a minute and read that short passage. If somebody wants to read 16 through 19, we'll just take a brief minute and look at that real quickly.
Chapter 6.
Yes, chapter 6, 16 through 19. So that one, again, we see all aspects of the body being used, and the things that God hates is he's specifically calling those out. And so I think we need to be aware of all of them. And then that last one of spreading discourse or discord or strife among brothers, being wary of our group here being a true family, kind of going back to Ryan Boyer's gospel meeting series of the family and the unity that we should have there. This week, we'll talk about Proverbs 7, sin is lurking, 8, wisdom calling, and then 9, the invitation or wisdom invites. And so as we're kind of concluding here, I saw the 9 chapters as a whole is kind of the introduction. I titled our class Introduction to Proverbs. I see 1 through 9 as really a broad introduction to the rest of the book and kind of showing that relationship of God as a father wanting that relationship with his son, the believer in him, and how we draw out that the comparison between righteousness and wickedness throughout the rest of the book. And so as we conclude, and we'll see in chapter 9 ends very similar to how the book begins in chapter 1, in that invitation of the wise woman. And so as we get into chapter 7, let's hit a couple high points. Starts off chapter 7 with talking about the father instructing his son and keeping the commandments that the father has given him. Then transitioning to, again, the adulterous woman, the sin, how it entices the naive man, the man who isn't following wisdom or being wise, and how good it may seem, that adulterous woman, the sin entices us and it brings us, tries to draw us in and spend time close to her. And then at the end of 7, what happens when we turn to that adulterous woman? So jumping into the question, so how should we keep the commandments of the Father or the Son? And then kind of in 4, it also talks about saying to wisdom, you're my sister, you're my intimate friend. Like that close, very, I don't have a sister, but I can understand it with having family and being very close to that family and having that, I'm not going to do something to betray them and turn my back on them. It's that very close-knit, and it kind of keeps us in check. It brings us back. Anything else on how we should keep those commandments? Mason? Thoughts on keeping those commandments. All right, so I want to take a second and also read chapter 7, verses 6 through 12, and kind of getting that image in our mind of what that enticement is, what that adulterous woman looks like. So starting in chapter 7, verse 6, this is wisdom looking out. Or the father looking out. For at the window of my house, I looked out through my lattice, and I saw among the naive verse 7, and I saw among the naive and discerned among the youth a young man lacking sense, passing through the streets near her corner, and he takes the way of her house. And in the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, and in the darkness, and behold, a woman comes to meet him, dressed as a harlot, cunning of heart. She is boisterous and rebellious. Her feet do not remain at home. She is now in the streets, now in the squares. She lurks by every corner. That puts a very dark, sneaky, kind of hidden image in my mind. And so what can we learn from that passage and on into through 23? Go ahead, Anthony. We've been talking about that as it Solomon talks about the adulterous woman and how it can be applied both ways. Of it could be a truly adulterous woman, or it could be sin in general and how it seeks to draw you in. What else can we learn from that naive man and leading that life, Ben? If we don't, we kind of get down further into that passage of what I had 6 through 23, and the ultimate result is death. I mean, it truly is. And so in the end of 22 and 23, he follows her as an ox is to the slaughter, as the one in the fetters of discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces through his liver and a bird hastens to a snare. So he does not know what it will cost him his life. Animals, they don't know. They don't think. They don't reason the same way we do. You can train a very large, multiple thousands of pound animal to be led around and to be led right into the slaughter. That's what wisdom is calling us not to be. We can't be led around and into that trap of sin and into the trap of death and temptation. And so I think I just answered the second part, but when we give into that temptation, is that death a physical death or a spiritual death? And then maybe explain why you think that. Go ahead, Kurt.
Well, we know that sin's a spiritual death. So it's minimally that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're living in that condition, you're dead spiritually. You're separated from God. So it's minimally that. But we all know that sometimes sin has consequences that come along with it, physical consequences, which could be actual death, physical death. Somebody might die. Mm-hmm. Something they get involved in or get sick or diseased as well. So, there's lots of pitfalls as well. But mentally, your soul's in jeopardy, and that's ruin. That's devastation.
Yeah. So if we go back to what we looked at last week in chapter 5 also, it's that image that Ben laid out as wisdom looking out. And so in 5:21, For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. So, and looking out on the sin of man, he sees it, and that separation that ultimately comes from that. So chapter 7, anything else anybody wanted to bring out from chapter 7, looking at it, reading through it, other thoughts you have? Anthony, did you have something?
verses 19 and 20, talking about how to live the way, is just a part of the enticement is that there is no consequence. And then Solomon clearly iterates in multiple places here that there is consequence of this death and destruction. It's pretty much the whole rest of that chapter is all about that.
The perceived non-immediate consequence can be enticing.
Which is exactly the same way that Satan tempted Adam in the first place.
Yeah. Good connection. Dakin.
I keep thinking about the first part of the chapter where it talks about hear your father, hear the commandments, keep the commandments. And where I'm going with this is you at some point when your father gives you those instructions, you may not understand the whys or the hows and that type of thing. But you have to maintain that. And the reason I say that is over the years, I've had a call during the middle of the day where one of my sons will say, Dad, it hit me today what you have said about this. Therefore, as a son, you need to listen, but as a father, we need to make sure we are under respect enough that they do listen, even though they don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was maybe last week or the first week. I can't remember which week it was, but we talked about sharing at an appropriate age. Well, obviously you shared at an appropriate age where they heard, understood, but maybe wasn't quite applicable.
They didn't have the experience for it to become wisdom.
Yep. And that's exactly what it is when you get into this situation, you can use that knowledge and truly use it as wisdom and put it into action. Other thoughts on 7 before we transition over to 8?
One more, and I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I heard what was said about binding them upon thy fingers, and it does go back to Deuteronomy in 2 or 3 different places where it talks about reminding. I can't help but think about the phylacteries that people used to use and how now we put strings around our fingers or used to.
I don't know what phylacteries are, so.
You read the King James, you know. It was a reminder. These put little scriptures back into the door facing or put them on their garments and things like that. It's an old habit.
Yeah.
To remind them of commandments.
I mean, we do the same thing at our houses, our homes. We put verses up. We put scripture up. And just in the context of seeing it every day, it kind of sinks in. Phylacteries. Thank you, Dakin. I learned something tonight. So chapter 8, we see the transition of the father kind of laying out that image of what the adulterous woman is and sneaking around, kind of being in the dark off that path and drawing the naive in. And we see the wise calling. And then talking about what is gained by seeking that wisdom and gaining that wisdom. And then at the end of 8, where wisdom came from what, who or what wisdom is. And so in that contrast, what, how does the woman of wisdom call in comparison to that adulterous woman? Mason, Emily. She's not trying to hide. Like, there's no, you can't be at the gates and be hidden. Like, you can't be around the main group of people where everybody has to pass through the gate. You can't hide there. Levi. That discernment. So when we seek wisdom, when we find her and live with wisdom, what are those benefits? So we saw the consequences of sin and following the evil woman, the adulterous woman in 7. What's the converse of that? Kurt, do you have something?
Sounds like a lot of success in there. When I read all that, I see things that we would really like to have in life. Power, justice, reigning, wealth. It's really all the great successful things you want to have in life, but it's not the type of success you would think about, like being some ruler or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, so is that a pure physical thing, and what is that? And it's more of the blessing spiritually. You're guaranteed of a blessing spiritually, not a curse spiritually. Other thoughts on benefits, or what you took out of the things in 12 through 21? And so as we've talked about that, how wisdom's described, the benefits out of wisdom, and the connections making that connection to the beginning of time in 22 through 36, I think I found you guys may have found it long before I did, other typos, but I found my first typo. Who do you think Solomon is trying to teach us about?
God.
Well, Jesus. Yeah. I just had to ask him. So I didn't know what answer I'd get. And so I did want to kind of look at a couple other passages, specifically John 1, 1 through 4, and seeing that connection exactly with what we're reading here in Psalms or Proverbs 8. So John 1, 1 through 4. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and apart from Him nothing came into being that has come into being. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And if we drop down to, I think it was 14, talking about that Word still, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw His glory, glory of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth, talking about Jesus. And so drawing that conclusion that Solomon, God, is talking about Jesus all the way back in Proverbs, finding that life, finding that glory and the wisdom that he shares from the beginning of time, and seeing that. So what else did you guys think about in chapter 8 before we go into chapter 9? Anthony?
One thing about that last part, it's really interesting the way that it's worded, because it's picturing wisdom as being with God and aiding God in creation. And that's just such a strange way to picture wisdom that I think makes the image that much more powerful. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's like, this is what dominates over God, if you will, is wisdom. It's not kind of the way that it's kind of worded.
Yeah. That thinking of God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit all being separate but one is hard. Like, it kind of messes with my mind a little bit, thinking of that. Because you can't have, in my thinking, you can't have three that are, one does not equal three and three does not equal one in any math equation that I've ever worked. So I haven't worked a lot of math equations. Anything else in chapter 8 they wanted to bring out? Oh, I would have made it over there eventually, Peyton. Sorry. On chapter 8. All right. So chapter 9, we see that I don't want to say final invitation, but the final invitation we will look at, looking at wisdom inviting us in, is and how it's done and how she is doing that in this passage. And then 7 through 12, talking about the different responses, either that the wise response or the foolish response, kind of what we've talked about a little bit throughout all three lessons, is a proverb is putting two things beside each other. And here's this invitation. Here's the two choices you choose. And then the comparison of the adulterous woman again at the end of this chapter, and the results of eating and drinking with her. And so as we get into this, we're going to talk about wisdom laying out kind of a meal. And so that's what the representation is there. And so how does that wise woman invite or call again? Because she's now not just at the gate. What has she done now? So it's not just her and her alone standing at the gate yelling. She's sending out others. What else has she done?
She's prepared for her arrival.
Yeah. Do you have something, Anthony?
Yeah, well, she's also built a house. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a place to gather. There's a place to come to her.
Mm-hmm.
A place where she belongs.
Yeah, and so kind of that house, the meal, sending others out, because there's something that she needs to share. She has to share this. And I drew the comparison to 7 is the adulterous woman also prepared her house. She prepared all of these things to draw the naive in, and now you have the wise woman also preparing her house, getting her good things ready instead of the sinful things ready. And so when we look at that, what are those different things that we talked about, the sinful adulterous woman and the wise woman? What are those differences, and how they may us remember, in what ways are the wise different than those around them? Sometimes human nature is we bristle and we push back, we stiffen up and don't take that correction very well. Because we see also in I think it was 10, no, oh, 8, do not reprove a scoffer, he will hate you. Like that's the other route we have. So we have those two routes to go: either accept it and love the person, or hate them and push back against it. So kind of the last question I have, we got some other things to cover. So in contrast to the wise woman, how does the woman of folly call? And what is the result of living with her in that folly? Mason.
So she's seductive, living in folly, and ignorance. And then her message, some
always seeking us. Yeah. That's good. What other thoughts on chapter 9? Mason. Thoughts on chapter 9? All right, so I did want to kind of just kind of go over fairly quickly 1 through 9, the things we've talked about in super high level, and then kind of let you share what you've gained from this or any insights that you may have gathered from our 3 weeks of studying this. So the first one, wisdom calling. Wisdom is warning us. It's like it's the woman standing in the street yelling to the naive, to the fools. And then we have wisdom guarding us. If we accept wisdom, it'll be like a shield to us. And if we accept that in chapter 3, I'm going through the chapters, chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, it'll make our paths straight. We don't have to worry about what we're going to trip over. If we're going to trip over anything, we're in the light. We see the straight path. It's when we get off that path that we have the problems where we're turning to the right, to the left. We're tripping. We're falling, and we can't see our way. And then in 4 is the picture of the father sitting down with his son, walking with his son, teaching him what he has learned from his past and seeing his son grow up in that. And 6, or 5, chapter 5, not turning to that adulterous woman, rejoicing in the wife of your youth, enjoying that time, enjoying the blessings of the father and being in wisdom with him. And then 6 is working. Wisdom works. We have to work if we're indebted to our brother, to our neighbor. We have to humble ourselves and work at rectifying that, and then avoiding the snares, the pitfalls, the traps of sin, because they are out there and they are seeking us. Chapter 7 is sin is lurking. It's trying to entice us in. It's what we talked about tonight, is sin has this sneakiness. It's trying to appeal to us in whatever way it has, and trying to draw us in to ultimately trap us, like what we talked about in 6. And then 8 is wisdom calling us. We're seeking wisdom. We're trying to find wisdom, and she is not hard to find. She's sitting at the gate. She is easily found. We just have to find her. And then at the end, the chapter 9 is wisdom has prepared a house, prepared a meal for us to enjoy with her. And so what, thinking back over the last, this week and the last 2 weeks, what points would you like to draw out in chapters 1 through 9? Any insight or wisdom you would like to share? Seek it like the treasure. Other thoughts, 1 through 9? Peyton.
So we're clearly painted two different paths in the first nine chapters. One is wisdom and one is folly. Sometimes it can be difficult to know on any particular issue which one is which. And it can be enticing, it can be scary because woman folly is lurking around the corner. So one takeaway I had was we may stumble because she's lurking around the corner, but when we find out where woman folly is, we run the other way.
Other thoughts, 1 through 9? All right. So I think Travis told me this was his favorite graphic of my whole 3 weeks last week. I wanted to share, I had planned on sharing why I chose that graphic, because I think it has, to me, it had held two different meanings. It is really a great representation of us as parents, older, younger, we're willing to sacrifice. We're willing to give up part of ourselves. We're willing to have sleepless nights because our kids are not sleeping. We're taking care of them. We're taking part of us and giving it to our children, and hopefully filling the gaps that they may have so they don't make the same mistakes we do. And then the second reason, I felt like it is a great representation of what the Father in heaven has done for us also. We see throughout history about him taking part of himself and giving it to his people. He gave the commandments to Israel. And then ultimately he gave Jesus. He took part of himself, sent it down to heaven so we could destroy it, right? He tried to complete us by sending Jesus down, and ultimately did, but not through the way a lot of people would have liked, and the death on the cross, and that death on the cross ultimately fills that biggest void we have in our life, and that's sin. And so that's why I was reading through this and preparing for this, and I saw that, and it clicked with me, and those are the two thoughts I had kind of in this whole series of the Father sharing his wisdom, his word with us so we have salvation ultimately. So thank you very much for helping me out through this and participation. I appreciate it. I'm not sure who has singing tonight. Clayton, Anthony? Okay.